our Peace Bucket, we're joined by Joe Gerson, who is the president of the Campaign for Peace, Disarmament, and Common Security. And he's actually joining us from Vienna, where he's there for, I guess, some opening days of some meetings around the nuclear weapons, let's end them issue. But I was also responding to an article that he circulated, not one he normally would do, as he pointed out, from a former CIA analyst, Graham Fuller, who takes a pretty tough road, I guess, on what the United States has done and actually not accomplished with the Ukraine. Joe, do you want to sort of maybe sum up the key points of that article and why you decided to circulate it?
Sure. You know, I think in the United States, we've been living with the illusion that somehow the Ukrainian government is going to defeat Russia in Eastern Europe, and that it's going to be cakewalk for democracy. But the reality is, as grim as it is, that Ukraine is not going to win in Eastern Ukraine. That the Russians are fighting a war of attrition with greater military resources. The costs for the Ukrainian people and for that area are tremendous. And we need to begin thinking about how this war can end, maybe with what Thomas Friedman called a dirty deal. But the perfect should not be the enemy of the good. The reality is that divisions are emerging in Europe. NATO will not be as unified as has been promised. The impacts of the reduction of oil and gas from Russia means a very cold winter in much of Europe. We're dealing with inflation, not only in the United States, but in Europe as well. I think the Democrats have made a mistake in just the $40 billion just most recently sent, the unresolved commitment to a proxy war. And I am concerned what this means for the 2022 and 2024 elections, because it's the extreme right in the United States, people who are anything but Democratic, who have been raising questions about this war. And unfortunately, I think they're right.
You know, one of the, the universal combination of Russia for actually launching the investigation, I think is pretty well justified. You don't invade other countries mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. advance political, disagreement.
Right.
But even Pope Francis has, pointed out that, the United States and their leadership of NATO, certainly played a major role in provoking, Russia to do the invasion. But one of the things that Fuller mentions in the article, which I have also raised, is just that the media really has just once again been in lockstep for promoting the war and really not given us a very perhaps nuanced picture as to what is taking place. And the media always seems, or at least truth, always seems to be one of the first casualty of war.
Yeah, well, that's basically, that is a truism in its own right. I've been on the road now for 2 weeks, but as I was leaving, the New York Times was beginning to break ranks by facing reality. The truth of the matter is pretty well recognized here in Europe, is that the expansion of NATO to Russia's borders in violation of all kinds of common security agreements in the 1990s and pledges actually made to Gorbachev created a situation of security vulnerability on the part of Russia. I mean, Russia has suffered invasions, great invasions, three times in the past from Napoleon, the Kaiser, and Hitler. They had given warnings. Biden refused to close the door to possible Ukrainian NATO membership. Yes, the Russian invasion was an absolute violation of international law, of the UN Charter. That has to be condemned. But in this circumstance, we also have to, I think, be somewhat realistic. The idea that we're going to fight a long war, fought to the last Ukrainian in order to weaken Russia, is going to spell considerable pain, disaster for Ukrainians, for people in the United States, across Europe, and so on. We need to be looking at how we can encourage a negotiated resolution to this. Ideas are on the table. The sense is that we need to have probably three different layers of negotiations, one between Ukraine and Russia, facilitated by a number of countries, and including possibly the Pope and the Vatican as well. Secondly, U.S. and NATO negotiations with Russia toward creating strategic stability and beginning to explore what the post-war European security architecture might look like. And finally, we're going to have strategic stability negotiations and nuclear disarmament negotiations between the United States and Russia. Russia isn't going to go away. We need to be realistic here. I mean, how many Ukrainians do we want to sacrifice? They're losing, 200 or more a day from the military, not to mention what's happening to their cities.
We could go on a long time about Ukraine. And one of the interesting things about this article is making the point that it's actually probably been Europe that has suffered more from the economic sanctions the United States and NATO has imposed than Russia has. And certainly the extent that these embargoes have contributed to the rise in price of gasoline, it very well may be, what ensures the Republicans, win back control of both houses of Congress. But you're there in Vienna because I guess they're having an open meeting about the issue of the non-proliferation treaty about nuclear weapons. What is this meeting designed to accomplish?
Sure. So this is called the first meeting of states parties for the Treaty on Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. That's quite a mouthful, I know. We've had for now, over 50 years, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, one of the most important treaties of the 20th century. And in that treaty, the nuclear powers committed to engage in good faith negotiations for the complete elimination of their nuclear arsenals. As we know, the nuclear powers at this point are engaged in massive and extremely dangerous nuclear arms races. The United States committed to spending almost $2 trillion to replace its entire nuclear arsenal and its delivery systems. And the rest of the world just got disgusted with the failure of the nuclear powers to fulfill their obligations. So over a period of time, a series of conferences were held that sought to change the paradigm. Instead of focusing on the concept of deterrence and so-called national security, to focus on the humanitarian consequences of nuclear weapons, which, as we know from Hiroshima and Nagasaki and from the many nuclear weapons victims from nuclear weapons tests, are unacceptable. I mean, we're tactical nuclear weapons to be used by Russia in Ukraine out of desperation. It would likely escalate to a full-scale thermonuclear exchange and the end of life as we know it. So these nations, the non-nuclear weapons nations, many of them small nations, held a series of conferences and then negotiations at the United Nations in 2017, which led to the negotiation of this treaty, which basically renounces all the parties to the treaty, renounce ever becoming nuclear powers, even allowing nuclear weapons in their country.
We got 25 seconds.
Okay. And so the conference here in Vienna is designed to move to implement this treaty and to build more support, with the idea of ultimately surrounding, isolating, and leading the nuclear powers to finally fulfill their commitments to nuclear disarmament.
And honestly, the Ukraine war has raised, of course, the threat of nuclear weapons use. Joe Gerson, president of the Campaign for Peace, Disarmament, and Common Security, your website?
CPDCS.org. Please go visit it, and we'll be in touch with you.
And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.